Welcome to September's Open Systems Insight, sponsored by Leidos.
After repeated challenges with developing new tactical radio systems, the Defense Department's taken a different approach. The Joint Tactical Networking Center is a multi-service effort using an open systems architecture to create the next generation radio systems. Jim Evangelos is the Deputy Director for Standards at the Joint Tactical Networking Center in DoD. He tells me how the center is ensuring vendors provide plug-and-play technology going forward.
Joint Tactical Networking Center, and a short way to refer to it is JITNC, J-T-N-C. Basically, I'm the Deputy Director for Standards, and I'm in charge of all things concerned with standards and open systems architectures in general. So it fits in perfectly with what I'm responsible for and what we do. And a little bit about JITNC is that we are under the Army. We're managed under the Army, but we are actually where we get our funding from is that we're a tri-funded organization. Every year we go before a board of directors made up of representatives, in fact, from the Army, Air Force, and Navy. And in this case, we're inclusive in the Navy of the Marines, of course. But anyway, we receive voted upon funding from these tri-service organizations. And we're a very unique government organization because every year we justify our existence to these three services. And if we can't, we don't get funded. So that being said, we have some focus areas that we perform for these services, and we maintain and help these services with a DoD waveform information repository. Now, what that is, it's a storehouse of DoD waveform source code and documentation, and we maintain also a division that does testing certification of waveforms to certain standards. And then finally, my area deals with standards itself. And in particular, a standard that we maintain and that we've developed over the years, and it's gone through several iterations, is the software communications architecture and its associated family of 17 open application programming interfaces. So although I said that we're funded by three military services, just to make things even more interesting, we're managed by PEO C3T, which is a major program executive office at PEO, under the Army and is responsible for command and control and communications C3T systems, and it's led by a two-star general, General David Bassett.
All right, that's a great beginning point because it really helps understand everything. Now, this understand the waveform, you use that a couple times. Just for our listeners' sake, when you say waveform, what do you mean by that? In radio, I think of a waveform, but in communications, there's other kinds of waveform?
Right, yeah. If you go with the textbook definition from electrical engineering curricula of what a waveform is. It's, you ask an electrical engineer and they'll say, okay, get me an oscilloscope, and that's voltage versus time, and a sine wave is what I would say is a waveform. But in recent years, waveform has taken on a different meaning in the context of software-defined radio systems. And what it is it's actually, let's say, the software application that a software-defined radio or a tactical radio runs with. So you can think of, and this is terminology that's constantly used in the area that I work in, but if you're not familiar with that environment, then you can imagine it as a software application that runs on the tactical radio. And nowadays, tactical radio systems are very powerful computers coupled with, RF generating electronics. So it's very appropriate to think of it that way, as a software application.
All right, and then what you guys do in the standards area, as you said, you maintain the standard software communications architecture, and that has an associated family of 17 open APIs. Maybe talk a little bit about your role a little bit deeper, and where does the open systems, open architecture fit into this discussion?
Right. So software communications architecture is it's an open systems architecture. Actually, it's a framework that's used by tactical radio systems. And what that is it specifies a lot of the tenets that are characteristic of OSA and also MOSA, modular open systems architectures. Now, the APIs have been developed over the years, and they're a set of application programming interfaces that are associated with SCA. And by the way, SCA is up to its current version, which is 4.1. And the APIs are open to anyone in the world, literally. You can access the JITNIC website anywhere in the world. Anyone can access it. And these APIs are interoperable. They're meant to be interoperable with different waveforms, assuming that you follow a lot of the SCA standard. So the standard is written very specifically to design, components and interfaces, but it's not so specific that it ties you to any specific vendor or manufacturer. So it's truly an open systems framework.
And that's really the key here, is that you're not tied to any specific vendor, any specific technology, and the plug-and-play piece. When I've done several of these interviews around open systems, that's been the common theme that I've heard from is not to get vendor lock-in, not to get locked into one certain type of technology, but be able to say, hey, here's a component who, based on these standards, who else can help us? And I think that's key to radio, and I think that's an area where the Defense Department has struggled over the years, and where you guys, I think, are trying to stop that challenges.
Right, and the overall goal for and let's call it MOSA, modular open systems architecture, it's to deliver more capability at a quicker pace and at a lower cost. So faster, better, cheaper is said a lot in the halls of the Army. And that's also what we intend to do at JITNIC. And it's a tough challenge because, in reality, it's sometimes hard to convince companies or vendors that MOSA will make money for them. I mean, let's face it, a lot of these companies are made up of really good patriotic people, but at the same time, the reason why you're in business is to make money and to make a profit. So the DoD business model can't really be compared easily to a pure commercial market. Both markets have their distinct differences. Proprietary is not necessarily the enemy of MOSA. The IP, or intellectual property, can be placed inside of components of MOSA. And furthermore, it can be made opaque to other vendors and even the government. So once the DoD vendors realize that the government encourages this, then vendors jump in. But that brings me to a key piece. Contracts and contract specialists need to incorporate the MOSA verbiage. And I know that at the DOD, the OUSD, which is the Office of the Undersecretary of Defense, R&E specifically, this is one of the goals of the working groups that I sit in on to put the OSA verbiage into contract language.
We're going to take a quick break. My guest is Jim Evangelos, the Deputy Director for Standards at the Joint Tactical Networking Center in the Department of Defense. I'm Jason Miller.
IT modernization. A far-reaching concept when you think about it. That's why Leidos has rolled out a clear-cut, user-centric approach to IT modernization that boosts productivity while securing the IT backend. Learn how Leidos is advancing the digital workplace with proven solutions in collaboration, mobility, cloud, DevOps, data centers, and network modernization. Visit Leidos.com/modernize to see the approach. That's Leidos.com/modernize.
Welcome back. My guest is Jim Evangelos, the Deputy Director for Standards at the Joint Tactical Networking Center in the Department of Defense. I got a chance to speak with someone in last week about contracting at the Defense Acquisition University, the systems engineering lead director. And one of the things he talked about is that why acquisition and MOSA, modular open systems architecture, are such good fitting, because as you're developing the requirements, as you're creating, okay, what's our end result? What's our outcome of this project, of this program? You have to keep that modular piece in mind, because systems, and he was speaking specifically for weapon systems, they're not like a computer that you buy today and a year or 18 months from now you buy a new one. Weapon systems last 30, 40, 50 years. Is that the same viewpoint of why this is so important to get those contracting officers and get the vendors to understand that modular open systems, the power of it?
Oh yeah, absolutely. It's an educational process, but the OSA and the MOSA, these terms have been tossed around for many, many years, and these are not new terms. Especially folks who are engineers are very familiar with this kind of thing. So I think it's absolutely true that, you know, contracts folks and legal folks and all of those folks have to be on the team, but a lot of these terms come up out of the software engineering and engineering worlds. And in fact, these terms, open systems, dates back to the 1970s with something called Open Systems Interconnection, OSI model, used in computer networks. And over the years, other concepts were introduced, and later terms on open systems were buzzing around the computer terminals of the 1980s. And then sometime later, as software development and computer programming became more complex, the word architecture started to be used. And there you go, you have open systems architectures. And this terminology moved from computer networking world to software development. So to make a long story short, these ideas and terminology came out of the early computer networking standards organizations of the 1970s. But the basic tenets of open systems architectures, which I'd like to go into a little bit, they still exist in today's contemporary vernacular of software engineering language, and they're still at the heart of MOSA and what some folks in the DoD call MOSA or modular open systems architecture.
Jim, please go through some of those basic definition pieces.
Sure. So firstly, let's talk about interfaces. What do we mean when we talk about software interfaces? So the best and the three tenets are interfaces, components, and standards. And the first one I'll discuss is interfaces. So the best analogy that I can come up with is from the world of hardware. In fact, hardware that everyone, including millennials, are familiar with. And ironically, MOSA, although historically has been used in software engineering circles, it can be applied and is applied in some cases to hardware systems. So an interface is simply a mechanism to allow one to transfer data in one direction or another, or even in both directions simultaneously. And it's also, in the case of hardware, a certain shape, a configuration, or a port, if you will. So the easiest hardware interface I can use as an example is the modern-day USB cable, a universal serial bus. And these are cables that even my son, who's a millennial, by the way, uses to charge his iPhone, for example. And if you can picture these cables, they have a smaller physical mating connection and a larger physical mating connection on the other end. And there are various versions of these cables, and there are male physical connections that fit into female ports, and so on and so forth. So this is a pretty good example of an interface. It connects in a very distinct manner to a port of some sort, and it transfers data. And in the case of USB these days, you have maximum transfer rates that are around 5 gigabits per second. And there are even electrical rules that the wire must have, such as data framing and voltage levels, as well as even physical length limits of the cord, all engineering stuff. And by the way, these are all specifics about the interface. And the interface as well is generic. With a USB cable, for example, you can connect your digital camera up to your computer, and a lot of people do this, and they transfer images in either direction regardless of manufacturer. But you can also use the same cable to connect, say, your printer to your computer. It's the same cable, and there are dozens and dozens of different examples of this kind of thing. And in the software world, we call these use cases. But the point is that the interface is ubiquitous. And why is this? Well, it follows a very specific standard, and this is the third tenet in my three-tenet list, if you recall. And even more importantly, the standard is followed and agreed upon by basically the entire electronics industry. Sony makes a camera. It uses USB, which talks to a Dell computer, for example. So this is an excellent hardware example. But in software, it's harder to imagine unless you're exposed to writing software like I was for the majority of my career. But the important thing to remember is that in software, this concept of interfaces is preserved. And there are standards agreed upon by some industry or government or mixture of government industry agreement that specifies the usages of these interfaces, just like USB. Now, in the USB wire example, the wire and mating connectors on the end specify the physical interfaces. Well, you might say it's clear that the interface connects two different things, like two different electronic hardware devices that you use in your hardware example. So what is the stuff being connected in software world? Okay, this brings me to another tenet of MOSA, what we call components. Obviously, in the software world, we don't have hardware in the purest sense with high-level programming languages such as C++, but we do have software programs called components. And even the second tenant in my three-tenant list has been around at least as long as object-oriented programming has been around. A component is a collection of self-contained code. It can be any language, C, C++, even Fortran or Visual Basic, but it cannot operate on its own. It has agreed-upon standard interface port connections that are made as generic as possible, but with very specific details delineated in a specification or standard. And some people call a component an object, and in a lot of software engineering contexts, the two terms are used sometimes synonymously. Finally, the really important thing is that there are three tenets of MOSA. There are interfaces, components, and standards, and they're not just buzzwords, but these are concepts, and you might even say engineering disciplines applied to designing and developing complex computer software and even hardware. And we call these things systems, and that's the capital S in MOSA. And these are important because, like the USB example that I went through, if I have many uses for this component, then theoretically I can reuse the same component. I can reuse this component among many different vendors and perhaps many different hardware platforms. And what drives all of this at the end of the day is cost. If I can reuse the same component, then there is theoretically less effort involved in software development, and I can bring the price down of large, complex systems. And in the ultimate simplistic view of the world, the idea is to build these Lego blocks, if you will, that are all interchangeable, interoperable, and so simple to put together that it takes very minimal effort to get them to work together.
We're going to take a quick break. My guest is Jim Evangelos, the Deputy Director for Standards at the Joint Tactical Networking Center in the Department of Defense. I'm Jason Miller.
IT modernization, a far-reaching concept when you think about it. That's why Leidos has rolled out a clear-cut, user-centric approach to IT modernization that boosts productivity while securing the IT backend. Learn how Leidos is advancing the digital workplace with proven solutions in collaboration, mobility, cloud, DevOps, data centers, and network modernization. Visit Leidos.com/modernize to see the approach. That's Leidos.com/modernize.
Welcome back. My guest is Jim Evangelos, the Deputy Director for Standards at the Joint Tactical Networking Center in the Department of Defense. I'm Jason Miller.
Jim, that was an amazing explanation. I really appreciate it. I know I looked at your LinkedIn page, and I know that you also are a lecturer at Baltimore Community College. So I can see the teacher coming out right there. So
It's actually Community College County, but yes,
well, thank you.
Yes, I am.
Well, I knew it was a community college, but I could hear that the teacher coming out. That was awesome because I think it really helps define why we're talking about open systems and why it's important. So let's take that one step further. Jitnik is using it. It's what you guys are basing a lot of work off of. What's it mean for you guys, and how are you using it from a tactical radio perspective?
Sure. Yeah, the problem space that I work in is tactical radio systems. So we're working on planning on using open systems architecture techniques in radio systems that are handheld, vehicle-mounted, ship-mounted, aviation-installed, et cetera, et cetera. But again, tactical radio is the particular area that I happen to work in for a joint organization funded by three military services. And me personally, I'm an Army electronics engineer, but these techniques could be used in industries as different as medical software to financial analysis software. The architectural specification that we use in tactical radio space is the software communications architecture, but we have seen it being used in test equipment industry, for example, and there is really no reason why it can't be used in the medical or financial industries or a whole host of other industries, for example. Also these days, the technology of software-defined radio enables one to specify many components of a radio system that used to be only achievable in hardware as software components. So much so that one can make the argument that the modern-day tactical radio has turned into a powerful computer that has the hardware, the RF front end and the antenna, to enable data to be networked via electromagnetic energy, what is commonly called radio waves. Your smartphone fits very nicely into this description, and so does the modern handheld radio in the hand of a special forces operator, but so does the definition of modern sonar systems fit nicely into this. So you can see that this is such a general concept. It's very powerful and can be used among many, many industries. And I like the fact that you read my LinkedIn profile. I had a background with the biometrics company a few companies ago before I joined the government. And in fact, back then I worked on a biometrics API for the company that allowed them to use their entire product suite, fingerprint scanners, iris print scanners, in a very generic way with the rest of their computer systems. So this concept is very, very powerful, and companies use it independent of the government because most of the time because of cost, because, you know, the old adage, why reinvent the wheel, definitely applies here. Once you develop a component that is very useful and has open interfaces, why would you ever go back and redesign and redevelop this thing again? You can make tweaks to it later on and you can improve it, but, you know, why redesign the wheel once you have a really good working wheel?
Can you talk a little bit about how the work you guys do in the standards world kind of brings together the Army, the Air Force, the Navy, Marines as they're developing these systems so there's interoperability not just in the Army but within all the services across DOD?
Sure. Yeah, I mean, it stands to reason that, you know, among all of the services, they have a lot of commonality. For example, within the Navy, they'll use tactical radio systems, as well as, of course, the Army and the Marine Corps and the Air Force, of course. So tactical radio systems are everywhere and used in military service. And that being the case, we support the standards that affect all tactical radio systems. However, you know, some of the military services might argue that they have very specific requirements, and that's true. You know, certain requirements that the Army might have would be completely different or somewhat different than what the Navy might need. But at the end of the day, they all fundamentally use a tactical radio system, and the guts and the heart of these systems are very common. And that being the case, if you develop generic waveforms that can be used across services, and let's not forget our coalition partners as well. We have coalition European partners that need to interoperate with our systems, and at the heart of what we try to deliver for not just the Army and the Navy, but also our coalition partners, is interoperability. We want our soldiers and our sailors and our airmen and our Marines to be able to communicate with our coalition partners in a seamless and secure way. Part of the essential element of military communication systems is security as well. So in order to meet those very stringent requirements, it helps to have components that can be reused among different disparate tactical communication systems.
Jim, thank you so much for your time today. My guest has been Jim Evangelos, the Deputy Director for Standards at the Joint Tactical Networking Center in the Department of Defense. Jim, again, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Jason. It's been a pleasure and an honor to speak with you.
Thank you for listening to this week's Open Systems Insight show, sponsored by Leidos on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. The entire program can be found on demand at federalnewsradio.com. Search Open Systems.
IT modernization, a far-reaching concept when you think about it. That's why Leidos has rolled out a clear-cut, user-centric approach to IT modernization that boosts productivity while securing the IT back-end. Learn how Leidos is advancing the digital workplace with proven solutions in collaboration, mobility, cloud, DevOps, data centers, and network modernization. Visit Leidos.com/modernize to see the approach. That's Leidos.com/modernize.